Why do you listen to Issues Etc.? We're preparing for a live 24-hour broadcast of Issues Etc. on Wednesday, April 14th and Thursday, April 15th, and we want to hear from you. Please leave your thoughts about this worldwide outreach on the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from, 618-223-8384. Why do you listen to Issues Etc.? 618-223-8384.
As Easter begins and Passover comes to a close, let us remain ever mindful of the unity of purpose and the common bond for which they sacrificed all they had and for which so many others have sacrificed so much.
Peter was the original Jonas brother, and his brother Andrew was the other, and they were followers of Jesus.
Happy Easter, everybody. How you doing? We want to thank Pastor Rick Warren for having us. We are so blessed to be here.
Thank you for providing theology for clerical collar, white collar, and blue collar.
Fridays are always exciting days. Today especially so, we're getting ready. Deep within preparations for Issues Etc. 24 coming up in a mere 5 days. And it will require quite a bit of preparation to do 24 hours of continuous Bible study here on Issues Etc. starting Wednesday next week, running all the way through Wednesday starting at 4 o'clock and then on into Thursday at 4 o'clock, a full 24 hours of Issues Etc. We do it because we love our listeners. It's that simple. And one of the ways we like to show the appreciation we have for our listeners, they're the ones that keep us on the air. They're the ones that brought us back. They're the ones that provide us with so many good suggestions, so many questions, so many comments. We like to read your email. We read it all. We can't respond to it all, but we try to respond to as much of it as we can on Friday afternoons. First thing, your email and your comments from the Issues Etc. listener comment line during the first, 45 minutes or so of Friday afternoons Issues Etc. It is Friday afternoon, April the 9th. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're coming to you live. You can join us for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MY-I-E. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. talkback@issuesetc.org, or Twitter us at issuesetc. After listener email and Issues Etc. comment line, we'll pick the Issues Etc. blog of the week. When we went to air, Jeff still didn't have his picked, but he will. I know he will somehow. In the next 50 minutes, Colleen Carroll Campbell will join us in the second hour. We're going to talk about two issues with her. The sexual abuse scandal in the Roman Catholic Church that has now kind of got a new locus there in Western Europe. And we'll also talk about the prospect of early marriage. Dr. Robert George will be with us for about 10 minutes after that. Of course, the big news is that Associate Justice of the Supreme Court, John Paul Stevens, has announced that he will, after 34 years serving on the High Court, retire, and he will leave an open space. What will it mean for the complexion of the court? We'll find out from Dr. Robert George of Princeton University in the second hour. And then, as usual on Friday afternoons, Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. Now, we put together four soundbites from this week's Issues Etc. audio. We're going to play them for you in about 90 minutes or so. And then all you need to do is listen and vote. 1-877-623-6943-877-623-MY-I-E, or talkback@issuesetc.org. You can also vote and see what the sound bites are and a link to listen to them at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. I'm already tired, and we're only 3 minutes into 1 hour. What is it going to be like 6 days from now when we're like hour 10?
We're going to tell our guests to just talk in half-hour blocks.
Yes.
Don't expect any questions from Wilkin.
Right. Every answer. We'll
turn your mic off when you snore.
Yes. Every answer will just be will be a minimum of 25 minutes.
I forgot I needed to ask for next Wednesday off.
Yeah. That ain't going to happen this time.
Yeah.
I mean, he's irreplaceable at any time, but especially he'll be irreplaceable during Issues 24. I don't know how the math works out. There are only three of us here. And it's not like you can divide up 24 hours in terms of the work over three people. It's going to be the three of us up 24 straight hours and working hard to bring you the very best Issues Etc. And our guests, will be kind enough to join us at various and odd hours. People were asking me, how are you going to do the wee hours of the morning? Well, since we live on a planet, there are people who live on the other side, and when it's night here, it's day there. And we have a few friends over there who've agreed to not have to get up in the middle of the night to talk to us, but just from the convenience of their daylight hours, do some great Bible study with us.
You know, this might surprise some folks working at LC-MIS Inc., but there is life outside St. Louis, Missouri.
That's true.
Really is. There really are. There's really pastors and parishes and theologians. And
there's no need whatsoever to remain local in a world where we have global communication. No reason in the world. So that's why we chose 24 hours. I mean, one revolution of the earth will all come around full circle, and we'll have 12 individual Bible studies covering 12 books of the Bible. And we just have to thank in advance the guests who've agreed to come and spend the time with us. It's going to be great. Issues, Etc. 24 starts in 5 days.
Having said that, we still have the midnight to 2 slot open on Thursday morning of the 15th. And I'm hoping Dr. Bill Weinrich in Latvia will come on the Gospel of John, because there's 7 hours difference. So it'll be 7 to 9 his time. Holding out for that one. If not, we got to find somebody in the West Coast from, that would be, of course, what, 10 to midnight West Coast time.
There's plenty of people. We'll find somebody.
That's right. And people, Norm Fisher, the excellent webmaster at Steadfast Lutheran, says people want to know the lineup. We still got some holes here, folks. We're still putting this
thing
together.
Look, we have holes, with the exception of usually Friday's show, which has these regular elements built into it. We've got holes in the show, sometimes well into the show. That's what we have a producer for. That's why he's in there, and I'm in here. And while I'm in here, he does what he does out there. You learn to live with it.
Here's Andy. He writes from Skaggsville, Maryland. And this has to do with the Mega Church Easter giveaways. That's the most response we've got in any shows we've done this week. No surprise there, I think. Andy writes, something that I don't think that was addressed in the segment is the following. Did Jesus use prizes, and then he puts in parentheses, miracles to draw people to himself? While crowds, I suppose, can mean as few as a dozen, there were at least a couple of times when it amounted to thousands of people following Jesus around. They listened to him preach repentance and the forgiveness of sins, but I would guess that many showed up to receive his tangible prizes, sight for the blind, hearing for the deaf, cleansing from leprosy, being cured of diseases, other healings, having demons cast out, maybe even just to see a miracle. For private healings, Jesus often instructed to tell no one, but much of what he did was among larger groups, so he had plenty of advertising. In fact, it was the public knowledge of these miracles that pointed to Jesus as the promised Messiah. I'm sure these gifts were worth much more than a flat-screen TV, furniture set, or even a new car to those who received them. Some random thoughts, Andy from Maryland writes.
Well, Andy, it's good. It's a good question to ask. Okay, first of all, it's actually two questions. We have to distinguish between why Jesus did the miracles as opposed to why someone might have come to listen to or see Jesus do a miracle. The two are completely separate things. Did Jesus do the miracles to attract the crowds? Emphatically, no. Did he heal the blind to attract the crowds? No. He healed blind people because blind people need to see. Did he make the lame walk to attract the crowds? No. He made the lame walk because lame people need to walk. Did he cast out demons to attract crowds? No, he cast out demons because people were under the oppression of the devil. There is no bait and switch with Jesus whatsoever. In fact, if you look at the accounts, while people are attracted to Jesus because he does miracles, there's no doubt about that, but that's the reason they came, not the reason he did it. Heck, they might have come. A lot of people came just to debunk him, to trick him into saying something that they could use against him. We never base what we do in the church on why someone may come. People come for reasons good and bad. The church must be like Jesus and do what it does for all the right reasons. Jesus did his miracles to serve those in need. He never did them in his own self-interest. Never, ever, not once. He did it because he loves people. And he's meeting their needs. Now, if you look at the accounts, most of the time, when it is a large crowd, Jesus doesn't do the miracle to attract them. He does it to take care of some of their needs. The case in point, of course, is the feeding of the 5,000, feeding the 4,000. The crowd's already there. In fact, after he's done the miracle, what happens? After he's done the miracle, the crowds either disperse of their own free will, many never to return. Hey, they were fed. Or they stick around and expect more from him. And when they do, Jesus starts teaching them things that are difficult to understand and difficult to hear. And he says, you're following me because you ate and you were satisfied. I've got better bread. No bait and switch with Jesus. Why did he feed them? They were hungry. He didn't feed them as an illustration or to make a point. He fed them because they were hungry. And when all they wanted from him was bread, when that was the reason they stayed with him, he would just assume that they go away. All right. So we distinguish between why Jesus did the miracles, never once to attract a crowd, and why people may have come to see him. The problem with the church nowadays is it's obsessed with why people want to come in the doors. And it says, well, if people want to come in for this reason, then that's what we're going to do. If people want to come for this, then that's what we're going to do. If people have selfish motivations, we're going to cater to those selfish motivations. If people are materialistic, we're going to cater to the materialism. Oh, yeah, and then later we'll tell them about Jesus. A little bit of bait and switch. Never, ever once did Jesus or any of the apostles do these kind of things. So, I mean, I think that really answers the question. I'm glad you asked. It was a very good question. Let's take a break when we come back. More of your email. Maybe a few comments from the Issues Etc. comment line on this Friday, April the 9th. Our call-in number, coming to you live, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE. Talk back at issuesetc.org or Twitter us at issuesetc. A little bit later, Issues Etc. blog of the week. But in the meantime, more email right after this.
Here's a special offer for Issues Etc. listeners. For any size gift during the Easter season, we'll send you a CD of an Easter and Ascension sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin. You can donate online, issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift between Easter Sunday and Ascension Day, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Easter and Ascension sermons.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
No consultants necessary. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Zion Lutheran, Muscoota, Illinois. Redeemer Lutheran, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Grace Lutheran, Auburn, Michigan. Zion Lutheran, Pleasant Plains, Illinois. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word, Rochester Hills, Michigan. Zion Lutheran, Laramie, Wyoming, Redeemer Lutheran, Seymour, Indiana, Zion Lutheran, East Moline, Illinois, and Peace Lutheran, South St. Louis County. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. Journal, issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Going through listener email on this Friday afternoon. Andrew was the emailer before, is that correct?
Yes, he concludes his email from Andrew from Skaggsville, Maryland. Some random thoughts. While some may believe the end justifies the means or do whatever it takes, I did not hear the megachurch pastor use these phrases. As you pointed out, we have to assume that the gospel is preached, as the pastor said, along with these giveaways. Do not Lutheran pastors take advantage of funerals and baptisms to reach unchurched family and friends with law and gospel? I don't think any of these are truly bait-and-switch tactics. Anyone should expect to hear law and gospel in the church, and it is tragic when they don't. Another question, or comment, or question. If the church had collected $2 million in cash, then used it to provide for seekers' real needs, food, clothing, mortgage payments, doctor's bills, utility bills, etc., maybe closer to what would Jesus do, would this have been different? Is this simply a case of what Jesus did is not what he told the church to do? Thanks for the email, and thanks for listening in, Maryland, Andy.
Okay, the question about funerals or weddings or something like that. Why do pastors preach the gospel at a funeral? Because the family needs to hear it. Not because Uncle Joe came in from Saskatchewan where he's unchurched and he needs to hear it. It's because the family needs to hear it. Everyone needs to hear it. They all need to hear it. There's no taking advantage of the opportunity of the death of Uncle Melvin. That is the opportunity to preach the gospel each and every time. See, this is the problem. We think about it in kind of marketing terms. Well, you got them in the door. You better take advantage of the opportunity. Look, if they came in the door, if five people came in the door, three people came in the door, you're still going to preach the gospel, aren't you? There's no taking advantage of the opportunity. And it's never bait and switch. Someone may think, again, it is exactly the distinction we had before, the distinction between why Jesus did something and why people might have been attracted to him. The church does not allow itself to be guided by what might attract people. We have seen, with ample evidence, what becomes of the church when it allows itself, its message, its methods, its practices to be guided by what might attract people. Sooner or later, it ceases to be the church. Hey, why did the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America decide to approve of homosexuality? Because it turned some people off when they didn't. So, in the name of attracting people, because that might attract people, they did that. Because they, like so many on the other end of the theological spectrum, allowed themselves to be guided by what might attract people rather than what God's Word clearly teaches and what we've been given to teach and proclaim to anyone all the time.
On the same subject, a kind of different perspective, Michael in Strasburg, Illinois writes, in this interview, the pastor tied in the giveaway to the giving of forgiveness in the sacrifice of Christ, hence the sermon title, The Greatest Giveaway. I would not so much call it a bait and switch as it is a $2 million sermon illustration. So let's evaluate it as a sermon illustration. Pastor said it helped to illustrate the gift of salvation that God gives to us. But does it? Why do some get prizes and others not? Why are some saved and others not? Is salvation something that is given only to a few who are lucky enough to have their names drawn at random, even though everyone has a chance? Or is it given freely to all? While it wouldn't have been as flashy, wouldn't have been a better $2 million illustration to have given everyone in attendance $100 each? Salvation is given freely to all, regardless of age, race, gender, etc. While $100 is not as wow as a new car, it is still enough to have you sit up and take notice. Perhaps to better underscore the universal atonement, have a huge stack of $100 bills on a table up front, then start reading through names selected randomly from a telephone book. This bill is his. But he has refused it by being absent from where it is given. God's grace is ours, but we refuse it when we absent ourselves from where his means of grace are. Michael from Strasburg, Illinois concludes, I think as sermon illustrations go, this would stick in the minds of people. Though I'm not at all thrilled with the equating grace to money, I also think there are better ways of using $2 million to spread the word of God, like sending 16 word and sacrament missionaries into the field for a year, providing a full 4 years of seminary education for 10 students, supporting 20 mission congregations for a year, etc. If you want to play the numbers game, which I normally don't, any of these suggestions would reach more lost souls than the 300 mentioned in the news story for the same $2 million spent. Thanks for listening, and thanks for the email, Michael in Strasburg, Illinois.
Smartest listeners in radio, there's no doubt about it. And you're right. If an illustration to do what it's supposed to do, it can't have some kind of glaring problem with it, like the raffle that was held there, that some get it and some don't, and it's, but everybody gets kind of an equal chance as long as their name is in the bin. All illustrations fall apart, but that one fell apart pretty soon. I mean, really pretty soon. Now, here's the question. Here's the question. Was the gospel preached? When this opportunity came, the people came in to get the cars and the big screen televisions and the furniture sets and the bicycles and all the things that attracted the people in. Was the gospel really preached? One of our listeners left this at the Issues Etc. comment line.
Hi, Todd. This is Dr. Keith Schweitzer. Just calling to let you know that I listened to Bill Cornelius's Easter sermon. He's the pastor who gave away $2 million in cars and toys and such down in Corpus Christi, Texas. Sermon was very, very much a synergistic decision theology. I can only get to heaven. I can only receive the keys to the new car if I take them. And so that is very much not the gospel of the resurrection, as it is certainly the gospel of righteousness and the righteousness being with me and not with Christ. So I wasn't really surprised by that. That's pretty much what I was expecting him to say, but that was the gist of his Easter sermon. So just thought I would let you know, you'd be interested. You can go listen to it on their website there. It's posted for from this past Sunday. Talk to you later. Keep up the great work. Bye-bye.
Well, it's a classic example of giving with one hand and taking with the other. Is there any doubt in my mind that Pastor Cornelius talked about the atonement at the cross and that Jesus had paid for the sins of the world at the cross? No doubt in my mind whatsoever. But you can give that with one hand and take with the other when you say, well, now that's what Jesus did. Now there's the part that you have to do. You have suddenly robbed Jesus and his gift of everything. When you say, well, it's not really yours unless you do your part. Jesus did everything he could do. Now the rest is up to you. You have suddenly made your salvation a cooperative effort between Jesus and you. And if your salvation is a cooperative effort, then it isn't really salvation, is it? You earned it by doing your part. Jesus did his part, and then he left your part to you, and you earned what he gives you. He didn't even really give it to you, does he? He requires some payment. The payment is what you do, your decision. You walk the aisle. You come up and take it. That's your payment. Payment in full made by you and not by Jesus.
Josh in Waconia, Minnesota writes, while you were discussing Luke's account of the resurrection with Dr. Arthur Just, you guys talked about the two men dressed in dazzling apparel who appeared to the women. Specifically, you were discussing the possibility that these men could have been Moses and Elijah rather than heavenly angels. This is not the first time I've heard this theory, but I shrugged it off previously. Lately, I've read Matthew's account of Jesus' crucifixion running through my mind. In Matthew 27:51-53, it is written, "And behold, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom, and the earth shook, and the rocks were split. The tombs also were opened, and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised. And coming out of the tombs after his resurrection, they went into the holy city and appeared to many." This part of Matthew's account has always left me a bit unsatisfied due to its quick mention and no other commentary elsewhere. Is there a possible connection here to the accounts of the men who appeared to announce the resurrection of Christ in Luke's account? In other words, could Luke be providing context as to the purpose of the raised saints and their appearances to many, as Matthew mentions? Thanks for your thoughts. Also, I'm really looking forward to the Issues Etc. 24 next week. I hope you guys get plenty of rest before then. Take care, and thank you for listening. Josh in Waconia, Minnesota.
Well, Josh, thank you very much. Thanks for listening in Minnesota. The point that Dr. Just was making when we were talking about Luke's account of the resurrection was that, I'd never heard this before. I'm surprised that Josh had, although I guess I shouldn't be surprised. I haven't heard everything. I'd never heard this before. That Dr. Just said, there's another place, I think he may have mentioned two other places in Luke's gospel where the exact same words, two men dressed in white, something like that, two men appeared to them. Those exact words are used. One is the Mount of Transfiguration, where the two men are Moses and Elijah, later identified as Moses and Elijah, appearing in glory with Christ as he is transfigured before his disciples and there at the resurrection. And it led him to, and it is speculation because the text doesn't identify the two men, but it is, I think, exegetically intriguing and perhaps even warranted to ask, could these two men also be Moses and Elijah, since Luke makes the point of using exactly the same phrase there. And he had more to his argument than that, but that's a summary of it. I don't know if that would include Matthew's stuff there. And I agree with you. You read that thing from Matthew, and it just leaves you with the gigantic question mark hanging over your head. What in the world, Matthew? You mentioned people coming out of their tombs and appearing in the holy city. Could you tell us a little bit more? And why doesn't he tell us a little bit more about that, about those amazing resurrections that happened in and around Jesus' resurrection? Well, I think there's a reason. It's not that they didn't happen, and it's not that there isn't an explanation. It's simply that when you've got Jesus' resurrection to talk about, why waste your time talking about a few saints that pop out of their tombs during an earthquake and appear after Jesus' resurrection? It's kind of minor stuff after the Son of God has been raised from the dead himself. And that's the whole point. Jesus' resurrection just, it brings about the resurrection of all flesh, even kind of in that proleptic way, even before the last day. Great news. We'll be right back. That's not the way it feels. Operator, or could you help me, please? Are you looking for a Christ-centered, cross-focused church? Check out the Find a Church page at our website, issuesetc.org. Are you tired of worship that's more about self-help than the Savior, the Christian rather than the Christ, and Christ in you instead of Christ for you? It's not about you. It's about Jesus for you. Find a church near you, issuesetc.org, and click Find a Church.
Why do you listen to Issues Etc.? We're preparing for a live 24-hour broadcast of Issues Etc. on Wednesday, April 14th and Thursday, April 15th, and we want to hear from you. Please leave your thoughts about this worldwide outreach on the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from, 618-223-8384. Why do you listen to Issues Etc.? 618-223-8384.
We're churchmen, not company men. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Commuters in St. Louis are seeing a thought-provoking message during the next couple of weeks. Billboards have gone up with the message, abortion changes you. They're designed to reach people who've chosen abortion or may be considering it. One reads, I thought my life would be the way it was before. Another says, I thought I was helping my girlfriend. People are then directed to a website where they can find hope and healing. Apart from the charged political climate, abortion is often noted for. One of the first messages the website communicates is, you are not alone. This is a well-done effort to help hurting mothers and fathers of aborted babies who are all around us. One out of every four pregnancies ends in abortion. If you'd like more details, visit today's broadcast link at lifeissues.org.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going through listener email on this Friday afternoon. Why do you listen to Issues Etc.? I want your answer to that question. And I want you to leave that answer at the Issues Etc. comment line, if you would. It's very simple. It's a line we leave open for our listeners all the time, 24-7, 365 days a year, 618-223-8384, 618-223-8384. It's the Issues Etc. comment line. Leave your answer to the question, why do you listen to Issues Etc., right there. And we're looking forward to playing those comments that you leave there, your answers to that question, next week during Issues Etc., 24-hour live broadcast of Issues Etc. for 24 hours beginning Wednesday afternoon at 4 o'clock.
Don writes, iPod listener here, forgive the delay. No problem, Don. We love our on-demand listeners. In your show discussing Holy Week with Dr. Peter Scare, you mentioned Jesus cleansing the temple as leaving no more animals to sacrifice. The only one sacrifice remaining was Jesus. The text does not indicate that, nor does the Bible. Forget the fact that this was the second time Jesus cleansed the temple. God took away the dividing wall of hostility, making the two one, not by cleansing the temple, but by nailing the written code to the tree. Jesus' crucifixion did away with further sacrifices. To link it to Jesus cleansing the temple during Holy Week is to descend to the very allegorizing that so enchanged the medieval Catholic Church and dragged it further away from God's grace. You can do a lot better on your exegesis, writes Don.
Actually, I was borrowing the idea from Dr. Arthur Just. I mean, it was actually not my conclusion. I hope I credited Dr. Just. That was a rerun during the Holy Week when we were off, if I'm not mistaken. And with Dr. Peter Scare, and I borrowed the idea from Dr. Arthur Just that when Jesus cleanses a temple, that second time, albeit, he can cleanse temples for different reasons at different times. He doesn't always have to do it for the same reason. When he cleanses a temple there during Holy Week, he cleanses a temple of all sacrificial animals. That's what those animals are there for, by the way. So that left standing in the temple where sacrifices would have been made, there is no sacrifice except Jesus. And then Jesus expands it to talk about he's not only sacrifice, he's temple himself. Tear down this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. I borrow the concept from Dr. Arthur Just. I think it's in his Lucan commentary, although I don't have that one. For some reason, looking on my shelf here, I don't have the Luke commentary. It's two volumes. And I in no way, or Dr. Just in no way, wants to imply that Jesus is there in the temple to make a sacrifice of himself. The sacrifice is made at the cross. But he is the sacrifice. He is the Lamb of God that takes away the sin of the world. That's a sacrificial lamb. He is the Lamb. And I think the whole point of that cleansing of the temple, it's always preached as Jesus getting after the money changers because they're engaged in some sort of filthy lucre. And it is completely forgotten in its context. There are other accounts of the cleansing of the temple where the emphasis does seem to be more upon the misuse of the temple. My house is to be a house of prayer. You've made it a den of thieves. But I think in Luke's account, as well as in the others, the real point here is to shove aside all other sacrifices as insufficient so that the sacrifice of his body might remain. Not a sacrifice made there at the temple, but a sacrifice made at the cross. I think it's a perfectly legitimate exegetical conclusion. And I think that even though the text does not explicitly say that, I think it's a perfectly legitimate exegetical conclusion. And it is not allegorizing. Allegorizing would be to say, Jesus cleansed the temple, so we need to stop all the money changing in our churches. That's an allegory. That's allegorizing the text. That's taking the text not for what it is intended to say, but rather to taking the text for and somehow analogizing it to our lives. That's allegorizing. And we do this all the time, especially with the Passion accounts. Jesus is crucified when? On the very day that the lambs for the Passover were to be sacrificed. And one of the gospel writers even says that it was the day when they sacrificed all the lambs. Does he say, oh, by the way, Jesus was the lamb, and this is all to show that Jesus is the real lamb? No, he doesn't explain it, but it's a perfectly legitimate exegetical conclusion to say, and his point is, Jesus is the sacrifice that puts the end to all sacrifices when he makes that sacrifice at the cross.
There's an email. I am being harassed by one of your female listeners. She's my supervisor. She's proud to be Lutheran, with her hardened heart and lying to her immediate supervisor about me without evidence. I cannot attend a church who has ensembles like her. Thank you for the opportunity to vent this error on her part, as I know the Holy Trinity does not work peace, love in that way. And the emailer concludes, how does one correct her attitude toward me using Scripture?
Well, okay, it's two things. First of all, please don't judge Lutheran theology, the Lutheran Church, or much less this program, based upon what some listeners may do. We don't control what our listeners do, obviously. And if this is indeed true, and there's no way for us to know whether it's true, whether the listener is actually harassing this person at work as in the capacity as supervisor, if it's true, it's wrong. It's obviously wrong. But don't blame Lutheranism for it. I mean, they could just as well be Catholic or Buddhist or anything else, and you don't discount a system of beliefs based upon the behavior of someone who holds to that system of beliefs. Otherwise, let's just discount everything. And while we're at it, let's just say fooey on human beings because human beings act like this. So you could, with that little trick, you can discredit any belief system, or you can claim to discredit any belief system. Look, Christians are sinners. My best advice, rather than start throwing a bunch of Bible passages at them, is to go to them and say, "You are harassing me. Why are you doing this? Especially as a Christian, why are you doing this?" And ask that it stop. And if it doesn't stop, there are channels, there is a policy, I'm sure, wherever you work, to deal with it. And if that does not work, what's the ultimate goal here? If your ultimate goal is to stop being harassed, then use the policy that you have wherever you're working. If your ultimate goal is to bring this person to repentance, then go to them as a Christian brother or sister and say, "Do you realize what you're making Lutherans look like? Do you realize what you're making Christians look like? Does your conscience bother you at night when you act? Look, I know what it is to have bosses that are dishonest. I know exactly what it is. And they do it flying it under the banner and the logo of the Lutheran Church. I know what it's like." You confront them directly. And what happens? In some cases, you get canned. And you move on. And you may not have won the brother, but you have spoken the truth in love.
Yes, this is Herman. It's April 7th. I had just had a brief conversation on the telephone with Pastor Thomas Eckstein, who was on yesterday on the topic of homosexuality and refuting the claims for it. One subject we talked about was that antagonistic caller that called in. I have a feeling, and listening to similar topics on issues that have said in the past, that we've heard that man before. And I might be wrong, but I think that possibly Issues Etc. is being monitored by some type of gay seminar caller format, and is being consequently, he called in with a type of provocative assertions that he made. So that may be something behind that. But it was, also an opportunity to straighten the issue out as well. By the way, following on that topic, the Family News and Focus has released in its information that Dr. Nicolosi, who does reparative therapy for people wanting to leave the lifestyle of homosexuality, criticized the effort by the Obama government to have a homosexual education czar implement pro-homosexual curricula in the public schools. He says essentially at an uncertain age of uncertain identity that many adolescents have, studies show that by the mid-20s, most of them are into a heterosexual orientation, and he was highly critical of any attempt to try to fixate and institutionalize homosexual identity in such an unstable population that's very vulnerable. news came that in Mexico City, permission has been given for homosexual couples to marry, which is the first time that's been done in Latin America. Just thought I'd catch up with you on that, and I understand Pastor Eckstein will be on next week. Thank you very much.
Jeff, you're going to have to refresh my memory. This was during a conversation with Pastor Tom Eckstein. We were starting that series with him that we started this week, and we were talking about refuting arguments in favor of homosexuality, and the caller was, I don't remember the caller's name, but someone called in, and we do a lot of radio. Someone called in, and they talked about closeted clergy. I mean, I thought Pastor Eckstein gave a very able answer. I don't know if we've heard from the caller before. Do you think, I mean, you know who the callers are, or you recognize callers much better than I do.
Yeah, I think he's called in before. Okay. But what I admire about him, he's not like you know, belligerent. I mean,
he didn't
I was disappointed because I put him on hold so he could listen to the, you know, made the call, but he did hang up right away. But maybe it was just best construction. He's going back to his radio.
And I think in the case of this caller, if I remember correctly, there's no duplicity. No one saying I want to talk about your great subject, and then when they get on, they say, you know, nasty things. Just being honest. Look, Christian radio is listened to by all kinds of people. They tell us that a full quarter of the audience isn't even Christian. So that's a good thing. I don't care how much money I gotta spend. Got to get back to my baby again. Lonely days are gone, I'm going home. My baby just
woke me a little. Coming Wednesday, April 14th, and Thursday, April 15th, Issues Etc. 24. It's a live 24-hour Bible study from 4 in the afternoon Central Time on April 14th through 4 in the afternoon Central on April 15th. Issues Etc. 24, Wednesday, April 14th, and Thursday, April 15th. Listen live at issuesetc.org.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen On Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On Demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click Listen On Demand.
Keeping the message straight. Getting the message out. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Stephen Parks, on why your congregation should join the Issues Etc. 300.
If I could, I'd just like to challenge any Lutheran pastors that are listening to consider becoming one of the congregations that supports Issues Etc. My own congregation is a very small church, and I know it can be difficult to try and budget $1,000 a year to become one of the Issues Etc. 300. But if you're being blessed by this, as I know you are, and if your congregation is being blessed by this, as I know that it is, I submit to bring it to the congregation to prayerfully consider supporting the outreach of Issues Etc., not only here in the United States, but also around the world. Thank you so much for what you do.
Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget. Simply go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. The Issues Etc. 300.
Wait, oh yes, wait a minute, Mr. Bozeman. Wait, wait, hey, 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 Mr. Bozeman. Mr. Bozeman.
Welcome back. A few more minutes with our listeners via email and the comment line, then we'll pick Issues Etc. blog of the week. We forgot to thank Kim and Pam for stopping by earlier today.
Pam Nielsen, Concordia Publishing House.
And Kim
Beeker, of the assistant to the next president of Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Pastor Matt Harrison of LCMS World Relief and Human Care.
They were stopping by. I was amazed at how snappily dressed they were for two girls going on a weekend in Chicago. But they came by just to say hello and get their picture taken. And we have the picture posted at our fan page on Facebook, facebook.com/issuesetc. Always nice to see the girls.
It is always nice. We don't get too many female visitors, although we've got some coming from Michigan here. I understand next hour they called. Martha Mahlberger, husband Steve Mahlberger, and their children are going to be here any minute, I believe. And, you know, what's Kim Veeker's husband, Pastor John Veeker, works for the Commission on Worship, the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. Kim tells she's never been to Chicago. What kind of caveman is John? John, let her get out of the house. Come on. She's never visited Chicago.
She says she's driven through Chicago, but never been there. So they're going to go spend, a night or two on Magnificent Mile, and they deserve it. They're great women and good friends.
Here's an email from Martha. She says, I'm sorry, there's nothing humorous about Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, and above all, Barack Obama. Glenn Beck reflects what his listeners are feeling. I do understand the system we have, and it's in jeopardy. I'm 50. I know what pink and red mean. I'm just saying what I have to. How will gay activists treat your show when they have the upper hand? My husband is 51. He is now considered an older worker. We don't have a parsonage or a stipend from anyone. You sound a tad shelter, writes Martha.
Well, I don't have a parsonage either. I mean, I pay my mortgage. on my own house. And while I do enjoy a salary from Lutheran Public Radio and, yes, a stipend from the congregation I serve as assistant pastor, that's an assistant pastor with a very small A, by the way. Yes, and I'm sure that I'm probably out of touch with the plight of a lot of people, especially our listeners as well. My concern about the lack of the sense of humor, I think that's what the listener is responding to, the lack of the sense of humor in conservative talk radio, not across the board. Some of them have kept their good humor, but by and large, it's getting kind of gloom and doom and kind of fearful. And look, the general audience can react however they want to, but Christians have no need to fear. What's the worst they can do to you, really? I mean, the great hymn says, let them take it all away. Luther's a mighty fortress, good fame's child and wife. We're not happy to lose these things, but the hymn says, let these all be gone, they yet have nothing won. What can they do to you? What can man do to me? That's what Scripture says. And the answer to that question is, in the end, nothing. They can't do anything to us. And look, we can get so wrapped up in the worries of this world, which are real, and the politics of this world, which is real and which is consequential, that we forget our hope. And Christians dare not be swept into the maelstrom, into the vortex of this kind of black thinking that the world's coming to an end just because we have a president who makes foolish decisions. The world is not coming to an end for that reason, all right? It will come to an end when Christ returns, and that's good news. It really is. And until then, that's our only hope. I mean, I think if anything, we look at the dire circumstances in the country and we say, it's just another reminder that we cannot put our hope here, that we are not citizens here. We never can be citizens here. We live here as strangers and aliens. We seek to serve our neighbor, to act in his best interest, not in our best interest. And as citizens, we vote toward that end. We act toward that end. We may be activists toward that end, all those good things, but never, ever without hope and never fearful of what man can do to us.
Time for one more. Kevin in Indiana. He says, it's been a while since I emailed, but be sure to know that I'm listening every day. He says, Issues Etc. 24 is an absolutely fantastic idea. I can't imagine how much work it'll be for you guys to put together something of this size. Thank you. Will it be available for download so that listeners can share it with others or listen when we can? I myself would like to maybe use some of them with my adult Sunday Bible class, writes Kevin in Indiana.
Well, it's a great question. Yes, as with everything we do here at Issues, etc., it will all be available on demand. Now, usually we're pretty snappy with the on-demand turnaround. Usually we can have everything up on the web page and available at iTunes for on-demand listeners almost immediately. I can't guarantee that after 24 hours of straight Bible study during the Issues Etc. 24, that those 24 hours will be up immediately. They will be up, all of them, the very next day, but we're going to have to sleep sometime. And I think sleep after 24 hours will take priority over publishing podcasts and making sure that the website is up to date. But it will all be there for on-demand listeners. We know that not everybody can listen live, and we love our on-demand listeners. By the way, when we say Issues Etc. 24, we're talking about this event that's coming up here in 5 days. Starting Wednesday, the 14th of April at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we're going to begin 24 hours of live broadcast of Issues Etc., running 24 hours until 4 o'clock Thursday, April the 15th. It's going to run straight through, and then one more hour, by the way, a bonus hour at the end of the, it's actually 25 hours, but the 25th hour, we can't guarantee that one will be live. We're going to be tired. So we want people to listen live. We want people to join us via email, via telephone, questions or comments, 24 hours of live Bible study, 2 hour blocks of extremely in-depth Bible study of various books of the Bible. I think we're kicking it off with Romans, if I'm not mistaken. And you can find out more at our website, issuesetc.org. Click support. You'll find there a video pretty much tells you everything you need to know about Issues Etc. 24. We want you to listen. We want you to participate. And we will be asking you to support the show during these 24 hours as well. That's part of what we're doing, too. That's how it works. Our listeners keep us on the air.